This is episode 293 of Jumblethink.
3 minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumblethink, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. On today's show, our guest is Sean Bowles. More about Sean in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, you've never subscribed to Jumblethink, you should do it right now. Head on over to your favorite place to listen to podcasts, search for Jumblethink, and click subscribe. For fans of Apple Podcasts, super simple, jumblethink.com/Apple Podcasts. And for Spotify, jumblethink.com/Spotify. Now let's jump into today's conversation. Hey there, welcome to Jumblethink. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a really cool conversation lined up for you today. It's with Sean Bowles. I've been looking forward to this conversation and this show for a while. A couple years ago, I first heard of Sean from Bethel Church in Redding, California. He had spoken there, and then I bumped into him again at Life Center in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I know that a lot of you aren't going to know who he is, so let me fill in the gaps, let you know a little bit about Sean before we jump into the conversation. Sean is an author, a TV host. You can catch him on Four Seasons of Dreams and Mysteries on Daystar. He's a spiritual advisor, a producer, and a pastor. He is passionate about seeing individuals and groups learn how to be more connected, find better vision for themselves through their relationship with God. Sean has been a pioneer in ministry, including the prophetic movement, since he was in his teens. His focus on having genuine relationship with God, creativity through entertainment and social justice have brought him around the world to meet with churches, CEOs, entertainers, and world leaders. Sean's style of speaking and coaching, accompanied by his unique expert perspective on the issues of love, creativity, and justice, have kept his calendar full. He's an author of several books, including the best-selling Translating God and Keys to Heaven's Economy. He is also the founding pastor of Expression 58 Christian Ministries, a ministry focused on the entertainment industry and the poor in Los Angeles, California, where he lives with his wife, Sherry, and their two daughters. Well, let's not waste any more time. Let's go ahead and jump into today's conversation with Sean Bowles. Sean, thank you so much for being on the show. It's an honor to have you on. And how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. It's been such a dream season of life right now.
Yeah. Before we dive in, I've got to ask the question, what in the world is going on with California lately? I lived in Northern California. I mean, it's like no power, fires everywhere. Are you safe? You okay?
We're not only safe, we're doing really good. It's interesting because we had the big drought. So after, you know, seven or eight, 9 years of drought, it created so much stuff. After we had the big rains, that created water slide or landslides. And then it created a different kind of dryness, like a different kind of drying out of these bushes that had grown all over that were desert bushes.
Yeah.
And so the fires are easier right now. It'll be different now that we have rain again over the next couple of years. But it just created some problems.
Well, we're going to talk in this show about the prophetic. We're going to talk about some books that you're doing. We're going to talk about faith and business and also culture. It's going to be a lot of fun. I want to kick it off. You are mostly known in the Christian spheres, especially as a prophet. And a lot of people listening, we have a lot of faith people. We have a lot of non-faith people. And their backgrounds vary differently on what they believe about God and faith and Christianity. What in the world does it mean to be a prophet? What does it mean to hear God's voice, if you will, when people are like going, I'm searching for something, I'm not finding it?
Yeah, it's so cool because I think, you know, this is a great question that I think our generation's asking. Is there people who hear from God and does it make a difference in the world around them? And I think when you look at the Bible, especially the Old Testament, the prophets were the people that, you know, business leaders and kings would go to find out, does God care about what he's building with us or what we're building? And does he have anything that he can do that would bring a different result if he does care? And so prophets helped them to define, this is what God thinks. This is how much he loves you. This is what can happen. Here's an option that's on the table right now that only God could bring. And so my job a lot of times is to go into sticky situations or to situations that need kind of a breakthrough and hear from God and help people to have options they wouldn't have seen based on their own resources, talent, strength, ingenuity, resource, you know, whatever. And it's really amazing to see, whether it's with politicians or entertainment leaders or whatever, going in and sitting down with someone who, whether they're a Christian or not, we have a biblical prototype of Daniel in the Bible, if you're a Bible-believing person. And Daniel was this Jewish guy who ended up serving a kingdom that was not like his own value system called Babylon.
Yeah.
And he ended up becoming the number two person in the kingdom at times because he offered God's original intention or design over the fabric of Babylon, even though they didn't fully embrace all of it and the methodology of, you know, Jewish or Hebrew or whatever culture, they still embraced things that would work for them, that would help them, and it still showed them that God loved them.
Wow. I know that some people, even in the faith-based circles, are skeptical of modern-day prophetic. They say the gifts of the Spirit are dead, that we live in a post-Holy Spirit-encountered world. And yet we're seeing, I think, of friends in the Baptist space who traditionally have felt that way, are saying, but we're seeing God move, so we can't reconcile that. And there are people that say, well, what's the difference between prophetic and psychics? And in their journey of saying, I want to hear from God, but can I hear from a psychic? Why is it so different what Sean's doing versus that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, there's two questions to that. One is, source, like, where is your source come from? And psychics have their own definition of what the source would be, and every psychic or medium you talk to would be very different in their boundary lines of where they land on how they're listening, if it's spirit guides or if it's the universe or whatever else. As a Christian and as a prophetic person, I only have one source, and it's God through Jesus Christ. And God has, in our theology, and most Christians would agree with this, God has an original design and plan that Jesus paid a price for on the cross to restore us to. And the plan was a good one. God created man to steward everything that he put on the earth because he loved man and wanted a counterpart or wanted relationships. So when someone meets with me, I'm not trying to spiritually encourage them or just help them along. I'm actually looking, what is in your heart, Father, for this person who you are a father to, whether they want to be your son or daughter or not, you are a father to, you love like that. Like, I think of my kids and how I've pre-planned all kinds of resources in their life, whether it's their, you know, whether it's their, college or their, you know, their homecoming or whatever. I'm going to be there to provide for them along the journey. And I've already dreamed of countries I'm going to take them and things I'm going to do with them. And I'm just a good father. Well, the Father in heaven, it says that in the Bible, that he has prepared us for good works from the beginning of time. So if we believe that he thought of us, that he dreamed of us, and that he loves us, and that's our source, that we're trying to speak into people's lives, not just what they want to go to a psychic for, like, who am I going to marry or what are lottery numbers, but like, give me the significance of my life. Like, I feel some of the bigger questions, would God resolve those with me? Would, as you as a prophet, can you connect to God with me and for me? And the difference between the Old and the New Testament is that in the New Testament, we all can hear from God in the same way. We all have a relationship through Jesus in the same way. So that means if there's a prophet, they're just helping you have your own relationship with God. They're not just there to be your source every time.
Yeah.
And so psychics can't reproduce other psychics necessarily, or they can't make everyone hear or be intuitive, and they can't necessarily resolve spiritual issues. And so many of the issues that we're facing, whether it be something about generational cancer, you're like the seventh generation who's had the same cancer in your family. Well, God could use somebody to actually pray and break that out of your generational line, your propensity, so it never comes back and it never resurfaces in your other children. That's a spiritual issue. A psychic might tell you, hey, this came from your generational line, but they can't cut it off with the power of what Jesus did. So it's a little different. But the other thing, the bigger question you asked is about prophets is like, why? Like, what's the big deal? Well, in the Old Testament and the New Testament, if you take out all prophets and prophecy, one third of the Bible goes away. So if you don't believe in prophets for today, the whole Bible is built on the foundation of what prophets prophesied and also on their example. And so we even have in the New Testament, the very first thing that happened when the Holy Spirit poured out in Acts chapter 2 on the new believers, or on the believers of Jesus, the Holy Spirit pours out on them and they all begin to prophesy in languages they don't even know. And everyone around them goes, I totally get who God is because you're speaking in my language to my heart. So it wasn't just like preaching time. It was a time when people who had very specific questions about their journey and what they were believing, and God answered them through another through their own language, through people who didn't know their language, by prophesying to them.
I love that. And we've set a really good foundation for the rest of the show today. And we're going to come back to what you're writing on, how it's impacting culture and business in a little bit. But I want to go back to the origin story. I did tons of research before the interview, and I couldn't find a place that I really heard the origin story. Like, how it's not one of those things that you go, hey, I'm going to sign up for pastor, worship leader. where's the prophet school? You know, there are now. But when you were coming up through those situations, it wasn't something that was. We didn't have the Bethels. We didn't have a lot of these spiritual hubs that were really like saying, let's train people up in this like we do today. So for you, how did you discover this? How did you kind of say, hey, wait, I'm feeling like this is me? And then how does that translate into actually making it a lifestyle where this is what you do?
I think, you know, it's funny because I don't have a superhero origin story like some people do who are people of faith, or they're like, my father beat me and locked me in a closet and that's when God showed up or whatever. I actually have really good parents and they just love God. My dad was a colonel in the Air Force. My mom's a stay-at-home mom.
Wow.
And they just raised us up and they did a lot of home groups and small meetings at their house with the churches they were involved with. And they just believed God would talk and they would say, let's pray and ask God what he's saying to this person. Let's do prayer ministry and pray for this person and not just say, I'll pray for you, but ask God if there's anything he wants to do in their life. It just kind of, from the time I was little, 3 or 4 years old, what's God showing you? What's God doing in your heart? And they define an internal process that God speaks from within. If you're a Christian, one of the ways that you know it, apart religion that from every other religion is our God wants to live inside of us and process with us. And he also speaks to people who don't know him and who don't love him, that he's that good. So we didn't have this boundary line of you have to be special or born under a certain star or have a birthmark on your butt or, you know, like I just grew up like hungry to hear what God said, because I saw what would happen when God would speak into like a foster care situation, or when God would speak into my friendships, or when God would do something that was beyond what I would even think about in my compassion. You know, like I ended up reaching out to a lot of foster care kids when I was in junior high and high school, not even understanding what I was doing and just seeing huge resolution in their hearts. And it was just, you know, then a school for bipolar boys when I was in high school, I worked for them because I felt like God had me on an assignment. So for me, it was never impractical. It was never like, I'm going to get my whole high school saved. And I love that when people have that mentality. But my whole thing was like, where am I supposed to love and where does God want to bring great change?
Yeah.
And he would show me places and it would be what I call an assignment. And sometimes it would be like the bipolar boys home was for 3 months and it was hard because every day was like me sitting and wrestling down kids who were fighting and because they were having manias and experiences based on their condition. But at the same time, I'd be speaking to them. I'm holding them down on the ground. This is not who you are. This is who you are. And they're crying and they're like coming out of their episode and just going, you're right. And several of those young boys are now free from bipolar disorder now. Some of them are not, but they still have a foundation in who they are. And that I helped to lay through saying, this is who God created you to be from the beginning of time. Not bipolar is not your story.
Yeah.
You know, and learning from a young age to look for God's story.
Yeah.
And so at one point I got introduced to people who are like, what would be modern day prophets? And it's been one of the greatest joys, one of the greatest challenges of my life, because so much of it was church centric and so much of it was, there's some ego in it and some narcissism in it and stuff that I saw through the years. And so it was hard for me because I just wanted to be a normal person. I was going after the entertainment industry and entertainment calling. I wasn't going after like a church ministry calling. So I was going with a musical theater scholarship, to LA, and God apprehended me and said, I want you to learn from this church in Kansas City. I want you to learn about the prophetic. And I'm like, ah.
Was that IHOP or?
It was the church before IHOP. It was before IHOP. So
Metro Vineyard?
Metro Christian Fellowship.
Yeah, okay.
And so, and it turned into a vineyard. And I had no desire to go there. I was going to go for 1 year and I went for 12.
Wow.
And, but it was, you know, the crew, there's the pastor was named Mike Bickle and he's a wonderful man. And I was 19 or 18 at the time. Mm. And he just, after about 2 years of really good fruit, he's like, you need to travel with me. I don't have a passion for ministering to people after my message, but I feel like we need more prophetic stuff. And a small group of us start traveling with them. There's 3 of us. And he launched me in ministry. And it was just launched me out in this thing. My first audiences were like his audiences. So there were 2,000 people and 3,000 people. And sometimes he'd say, I don't want to speak tomorrow morning. You speak or whatever. And so he gave me opportunities that I didn't even necessarily want.
Yeah.
But I learned how to say, okay, I don't have the skill for this. I'm not a very gifted speaker. I don't know even really how to prophetically minister to what people are asking for. Because people come when they think there's a prophet, they come with like, should I get divorced? Where's my missing child? I'm missing a diamond ring in my house. It's kind of the psychic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was coming not to meet a prayer list, a devotional prayer list of people's lives, but to say, God, what do you want to do in this environment that would be a catalyst for everyone to move forward, not just to meet the individual needs that you may or may not even want to do right now, you know? And so I had to learn how to not manufacture a gift that meets human needs, but actually minister to God's heart and people.
I think that so often we are looking for the answers that we're searching for that we miss God.
Totally.
And it's like we come with a bias towards what we're asking, and then God's like, yeah, that's good, but come over here. This is what I have for you. And I love that about, I've seen you a couple times at Life Center in Harrisburg, and we swim a little bit of same circles, or at least from that standpoint of where I come from a faith tradition of kind of that more charismatic, the Bethel movement, the Jesus culture guys, those kind of things. And for me, watching what you do is fascinating because, yeah, I agree that all of us can hear God's voice. But there are those who seem to either have that ability more tuned or are just willing to step out in faith more and say the things that they're hearing. So how do you reconcile that for yourself? Because there has to be times where you are like, I'm hearing this from God, but it scares me half to death to say what I'm hearing. How do you reconcile and walk through that when you're talking to people who you may be speaking to life in a moment where it's a crisis moment, and you don't know exactly all that's going on, but you're hearing a specific thing from God for them, and it's got to be interesting to go through that process. So talk to us about that.
Well, it is. It's very interesting because, like, for me, I'm actually being a visible model. I'm modeling it from platforms, from stages, and I'm also doing events. Like, we did 30 events this year to activate people.
Yeah.
The average event is about 700 people. Some, you know, we're all up to 1,800 people this year.
That's the Modern Prophet Tour, right?
The Modern Prophet Tour.
Are you continuing that into 2020?
We are. We're doing more. We're going to go to different nations again. We did 2 years ago. We went all over, like, to England and to some places in Asia and whatever else. Australia. This next year, we're going to go into Southeast Asia, all over Europe. But what we're seeing, and these are the reasons why I'm willing to go, is because I'm seeing genuine hunger where people are willing to be like me and be stupid enough to take the risk to believe this internal place. Because most of the way I hear from God, and most of the way I've trained people how to hear from God, is it's this internal process where you start to recognize this is God, not me.
Wow.
I've asked him to live in me.
Mm-hmm.
He's in my conscience. I mean, it's the same way that, you know, someone's reading the Bible who says, I'm cessationist, but that day they know how to use what they've read in their life application. And they're the hero of that story. No, thank you. They're not the hero of the story. Holy Spirit is inside of them saying, hey, you need to get over this forgiveness issue. And so I'm like teaching people how to hear from God and recognize that and reverse engineer all their wins in life to where they could see how God interacts with them so they can make better choices in the future. And it's going phenomenally. Now, on top of that, I have a very specific assignment over influencers of culture, justice influencers, people in the United Nations, people in Department of Defense, political influencers who are people who, in politics and, you know, with different, you know, congressmen, senators, whatever, presidents, and then especially entertainment influencers, people who are producers, directors, actors, musicians, whatever. So when I'm around them, there's a level of gifting I've learned that when you're in your grace zone with the people you're called to, a level of gifting, a level of access to God's heart comes. That when you're with people you're not as connected to, or you don't have the same compassion for, empathy for. So I think, you know, for me personally, I think that I've learned what my lane is. And then when I'm in my lane, it's a joy to take risks for people that you naturally love. And God's given me a supernatural love for people in certain spheres. And I tell people who want to grow in hearing from God, don't tell me what you're called to, tell me who you're called to.
Oh, that's good.
And then what you're called to will be defined about around who you're called to. So it could be the mom who's like, well, I feel called to, I do homeschool and I have a homeschool co-op. But I'm like, well, you can hear from God really powerfully about that because you're passionate about that. So you ask God about these other moms to give you strategy for how to bring up their kids in a way, like not just the curriculum, but ask them for what will make these kids the champions that we all believe our kids are supposed to be. And you'll start to hear from God because you're so in love with them. You'll start to see these gaps. Like you'll start to see a kid go, wow, they have a speech impediment. I'm seeing them. They're actually going to be singing and music. And so there's a gap right now, but God doesn't want to just give natural help. He wants to give faith at the same time. So you may have a speech therapist, but you're going to start to hear like how to speak into someone's life. And that's what happened. I think in my life, I had a speech impediment. I had a learning disability. I had a brain injury, like all kinds of things as I was growing up. And my mom and dad just walked in that faith gap of like, this isn't your story of who you are. This is who God showed us you are. We're going to treat you this way. And you have attention deficit disorder. So we're going to treat you as if you don't. And we want you to learn compassion and empathy. I want you to focus on what people are saying and the heart of what they're saying. And they just got these strategies from God that pulled me out of what I was labeled with. And Now I have, like, I don't resemble any of those things, but I needed that place. So I watched my parents and other people around us. They weren't like trying to be prophets or trying to hear from God powerfully. They were just trying to connect to God in a way that would transform their world, because there is so many gaps. There's so many places, you know, there's not just the promised land we're trying to get into. There's all these things we're trying to overcome. And that's what the prophetic for is for. It helps you to see what could be as though it is. It helps you to see someone in their full potential, not just in their partial potential now. And then you get to start treating that way. It's a culture before it's even a word. Mm-hmm. You get to start moving that way. Like, people came to Solomon, like the Queen of Sheba, and said, surely your God loves his people because he raised up a man like you. Look at this.
Yeah.
This is incredible. She gets saved because she sees how he's walked with God and how it's impacted a city infrastructure, a judicial system, a religious structure. And she gets saved by seeing what he's built. So the prophetic isn't just giving people words and prophetic evangelism. It's actually building a culture of your life that causes people to go, how come your marriage works? You told me your marriage problems 3 years ago. How are you this far past that now?
Yeah.
And you get to tell them the story.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's the interesting thing. One of the best definitions I ever heard about leadership is that a leader sees where we're going. They see the future, and then they live there and pull other people to the future they're creating. Instead of saying, hey, you know, we're walking through this and you know, they're already in the place that they're arriving at, and everyone else is trying to come to them. And if they live in that place, they can pull them to that place. I love what you said there about you had learning disabilities, you had speech impediments, you had brain injury, you had all of these things. And yet what seemed to happen for you in that personal life was you were able to step into not the identity that you were experiencing now, but the new identity of who you were actually created to be. And I think that for a lot of people, they live in an identity that traps them because they're not living in the identity that God speaks to them or actually sees them as. So one of the things you do often, and I've seen it time and time again through videos, through watching you in person, is that you often are speaking into the new future God wants to create, whereas they're living in the old place that's holding them back. Not everyone's going to get to hang out with you. Not everyone's going to get to be around people that are super prophetic and have a word of knowledge for them. How can they start hearing God from themselves to start seeing the identity of who they truly are, to go from what they live in today and into the future that unlocks the dreams, ideas, and destinies that they have, that they were created to live, the purpose that they were to walk into?
I think it just is a great question, because I think it starts with identity, and it goes back into, like, if you're going to believe from a biblical perspective, you look at, okay, God calls me huge names like son, co-heir, important. Like in Ephesians 1, it says he was raised above all positions and titles, above all men. And then we were seated there in Ephesians 2 with him somehow. In other words, he's saying, I'm giving you a value above any boss that any boss could give you or any person could promote you to. No one could discover what I've already discovered and created inside of you. So if that's true, if that's what the Bible's about in the New Testament, he's forming identity in us, then we have to slow down. And Jesus never said, look at me. He said, look at the Father. And he was saying that because, like, you know, those "what would Jesus do" bands would not be the right bands Jesus would wear. He'd say, what would the Father do? Because he was always saying, like, the Father is not just saying things. He's nurturing Jesus in a perspective of how much he loves the world and how much he sees people in a certain value system that they dreamed of for the equivalent of millions of years for each one of us before we were born. So if we sit down and we start to go, God, what is the why of why you made me, and who is the who of who you want me to impact, and who am I to you? Like, you can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. So many people don't like themselves, so they're not going to hear from God for others very well because they don't hear God for themselves. A lot of people say, I don't hear God for myself, which means, why do you think you're going to change the world for anybody else if you don't believe your inner world's going to change? Because the Holy Spirit says he's recreating from the inside out. So that means that there has to be listening prayer. We have to sit down and go, okay, God, I'm going to open the Bible, read some things, and then ask you, what do you think about me?
Yeah.
What is your real desire about me? Some people need therapy, inner healing, breakthrough prayer, whatever, to go along that journey. But if you can win that personal place of like personal significance, what is my significance in God? Because he didn't create you. Like a lot of people are trying to put themselves to death instead of the carnality to death. Like he never created you to die. He created you to live. And there's a lot of people who take scriptures and get really legalistic, like, oh, I don't ever want to be this. I don't ever want to be that. And God's like, I want you to be all those things. I'm going to put you at the highest lampstand you could shine from. I want you to have influence. I want you to have favor. I want you to feel like you're an amazing person, but through me.
Yeah.
And so he never discouraged, even Jesus, when the disciples said, we want to be your generals at your right and left hand. He never said, no, he just said, hey, that's not for me to give, it's my Father. So he said, pointed him back to the Father, ask the Father what you get.
Yeah.
Ask, you know, so I think for me personally, I'm constantly pointing people at, you need to have a real relationship with God where you can track what he's put inside of you.
Mm.
And that is his voice. So like who are, not just the, what you get to do, but who are you? What does he love about you?
Yeah.
Why did he create you? That's who you're going to be for the rest of eternity. So you need to get to know it now.
Super cool. We're going to come back to this in the second segment a little bit more, but we're going to pause here and ask a few questions as we wrap up this first segment. The first question is, how are you finding purpose in what you do?
The people. Just seeing people have this amazing connection. It's kind of like parenting. Like how do you find purpose in parenting? You look at your kids and go, I love them so much. I love the community I've been able to be a part of. And I feel humbled every day that I'm a part of massive conversations. Today I'm on the phone with the President's Council, with a major musician, with, you know, with some friends who are doing social justice stuff, building schools and war zones. Those are my three conversations this morning, where I'm helping to navigate and bring wisdom and bring love and bring ideas. It's like, it's the best. The people are, my capacity is huge because of love that God keeps having me partner to.
What is one challenge you're currently working to overcome?
I think believing for, you know, I'm 46 now, believing for the rest of my life that I can do, that I can keep morphing, because you get so less adaptable as you grow, that I can keep changing. Like, I feel like there's part of me that's believing for some things that are outside of ministry right now with creativity and stuff, to believe that I could actually change to become those things as well in life. And so just the adaptability factor, like, God, can an old dog learn new tricks? You know, can I go in a whole new genre? And just trusting that there's things inside of me that I haven't seen yet that God wants to bring out.
You have a killer podcast. It's called, Exploring the Prophetic with Sean Bowles. And I've been listening to it for a couple weeks now as I've been preparing for the show. Season 2, you asked a specific question of every guest. I'm going to turn the tables on you and ask you this question. What is the riskiest thing you've heard from God and acted on in this season or in your life?
Wow. I had a man who has 480,000 employees that I spiritually advise.
Wow.
Who's a multimillionaire, and he called me frantically because he had an employee and he's in a nation that they would never hear this, thank God. He would, but the people wouldn't. But he called me frantic because an employee was going through something. I literally saw the employee was going to try and hijack the entire company from him. And I said, you need to fire this guy today. If you don't fire him today, you're going to lose your whole company. Wow. But there is a redemptive solution. I gave him the solution. And the guy, after he gave the guy the solution and actually reorganized the whole thing, the guy basically unfolded his whole plan that he was going to hijack everything and steal this man's company. So it was super risky because I don't know enough about any of it. And it's such a strong word. And it was such a rebuke about this guy's life with a redemptive twist where they could stay in relationship. And I just was like, why am I saying, I don't have advice for this guy. I'm not running. I have 14 employees. I mean, I'm not running 480,000. I don't know what your life is like. So it was super risky to give that kind of advice with phlegmatically, like, you have to do this from the Lord. Like, and I don't do that a lot. So that's the riskiest thing I've done recently, but that was about 2 months ago. The fruit of it's been amazing.
Wow, that's incredible. What's the next big dream you have?
I want to produce content. So we want to produce secular entertainment. So we're going after some production dreams.
Super cool. Well, we're going to be right back with Sean Bowles. We're going to go deeper into this conversation. We're going to talk about his new book. And we're going to talk a little bit about culture, faith, business, and go a little bit deeper in that. We'll be right back. Here at JumbleThink, we have a simple belief that all of us are created for amazing things, that our dreams and ideas matter, and that there are far too many people who aren't stepping into the fullness of what they're created to do. Now, I need your help. We want to get that message out to more people. We want to spark a hope in them that they're created for something awesome too. So I want you to think about that friend, that family member, that coworker who's always talking about the dreams and ideas they have, but they seem to never make any steps forward. Would you share JumbleThink with them? Would you share today's show with them? Share it on your favorite social media channel like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter, wherever you connect with people, or just tell them face to face and help them find it on their favorite podcast app. Thanks so much for helping us get the word out about JumbleThink. Now let's jump back into today's conversation with Sean Bowles. We are back with Sean Bowles. All right, before we get going, how can people find and connect with you?
So the best way is just BOLZ Ministries.com, and all of our stuff's there. We have an app coming out that'll have everything too. We're on YouTube as Bowles Ministries, but everywhere else we're Sean Bowles, S-H-A-W-N, Bowles. And we have great YouTube content. We have our podcast. We have so much free content out there that's really fun.
And we'll have links in the episode notes. So if you're listening, go check it out. You really need to check out what Sean's doing. It's shaking up the world. I was watching along on your Instagram feed over the weekend. You had a pretty crazy experience. You got to go see Kanye West and his new movement, which I love, because whether you like what he's doing or loathe it, it is bringing faith to the forefront of popular culture and conversation right now, which awesome. Really, in a good way, because so much of
I love it.
Of what's going on in culture right now is the movers and shakers of Christianity that are saying I'm out, I'm atheist, or they've morally fell. You know, the mega pastors who are going and wrestling through that, and those are very complicated things. You are being positioned and have been positioned for years in a place of influence in entertainment through your church that you pastor, Expression 58 Christian Ministries. You are through mentoring and coaching and different aspects of those relationships, you're in proximity to that. What do you see going on culturally right now in America when it comes to faith and business, faith and entertainment, faith and being a part of our lives and not just a sideshow?
Yeah. I mean, I think the prototype has always been, because Jesus was this, it's the Daniel in Babylon. It's the Joseph in Egypt. It's Esther in King Xerxes' world. You know, it's us being in a place that's completely secularized where it looks dark. Isaiah 60, you know, rise and shine for your light has come for the glory of the Lord. See, thick darkness covers the earth. The prototype is that we're called to dark spaces because that's where light shines the most.
Yeah.
And the problem is we want to fix the darkness, or we want, when stuff starts to convert over to light, we want instant fruit. We don't want the garden experience of like, you have to tend it. You have to actually, before you get a harvest, a real harvest, you know, you have to, it takes a process. And so Kanye West is an interesting one because he had a very public mental breakdown where he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So there's Christians and industry people, both people who aren't Christians, who just think he's on his next
mental breakdown.
He's gone through so many things, his next bandwagon. And they're just judging it as like, oh, he's on a fad. You know, next it'll be Kabbalah or something, you know. The difference is like those who are on the inside of Kanye's world, I'm not on the inside. I'm just friends of the people who are like leading the choir or who are, you know, involved in the services. They're actually having really honest conversations with Kanye, and they're actually, and he's only proclaiming Jesus, and he's only proclaiming Jesus from an evangelical perspective.
Yeah.
So he's not, he doesn't have any other mixture. He doesn't have any other religions. He has had some real spiritual self-aware moments. Like he shares very publicly now about when he was introduced to pornography at the age of 5.
Yeah.
And how it created a sexual significance and addiction where it was the only thing that would bring him joy and hope, and how when he got delivered of that, when he surrendered to Christ, it was one of the first things he surrendered, is this addictive behavioral lifestyle. And it went away for the first time as he had true significance in Christ come into him. So for him, like some of the proof text in him, it's a classic conversion story of like your bad nature goes away and you're good, and he gives you his nature. He's walking through that, but he's at the very beginning of the process, very beginning of the process, you know? And, you know, I think a lot of us don't have patience for process. And I think Kanye is a great test for the church. So is Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber. They're great tests for the church. Are we going to love well and not expect full maturity outside running out of the gate, especially if Justin Bieber's so young, period. So it's like, you know, Justin and Haley are so young that they're not going to get it all right. Chris Pratt is another good example of somebody who's like, you know, was on, I saw him the other day doing a drinking game, like on one of the shows he was on, getting totally drunk. And in the end, he starts talking about his Christian experience. And a lot of Christians would just discount it and say, well, because he did this, none of it's real.
Right.
And the challenge is when you have people who are in a complete Babylon, they're not, they didn't start out as Daniel. Daniel started out as Daniel. So he started going in to into Babylon with the spirit of faith to convert, transform, and bring deliverance to his people. And then also to help Babylon. These guys are getting saved in Babylon. It's kind of like Nebuchadnezzar went crazy in Babylon.
Yeah.
But Daniel was the first one there. After he tried to kill him, Daniel was the first one there going, oh, I'm so glad you're okay. Like, I thought you were, you know, like he loved Nebuchadnezzar. Like he had a love for these people who were pagans. And I feel like the church doesn't have that. We don't have that. The big C church doesn't understand how to love people who are in process, people who God still calls us sons and daughters. Like when you read the parable, the prodigal son, have you always thought of like, I've been the prodigal sometimes, or I've been the older brother sometimes, right? Most Christians think that way.
Yeah.
But we're supposed to think we're the father.
Yeah.
How you're supposed to be reading these, like you're not supposed to read the parable of talents and go, I want to be the one, the best steward with the best talents. You're supposed to be the one who says, I'm the one giving the talents and investing them into people.
Yeah.
I'm the one who's, you're supposed to put yourself in the father's position because you're doing what the father does.
Yeah.
You're not doing what the people do. You're doing what the father does. And the church is so preoccupied with being the sons and being like, you know, competitive with each other and whatever, you know, like, is everything right? They're not thinking I'm the investor. I'm the benefactor. They're still trying to get benefactors. They're trying to get people saved to grow their churches.
Yeah.
The father's not trying to get people saved to grow his movement. He's trying to win their hearts and actually win the culture of their hearts so they'll partner to him for the whole world. And it's so different.
So how do we as believers, as people who are leading in spaces, whether it's at the very high level of a massive church or leading a small church or just going and leading a department as a volunteer, whatever level you're at, you're leading somebody, you're following somebody and somebody's following you. How do we start changing that mentality of sons and daughters, which is a good mentality to say, you go from sons and daughters to being a father of movements. You become a father to people in the transformation of their lives through this process of encountering broken people and saying, I see something better. I mean, that's what we talked about in the first segment. That's what you do is you call out the identity God sees and pull them to that. So how do we pivot that and say, okay, sonship is good and it's biblical, but God also calls us to be fathers and mothers of people?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we have to define what fathering and mothering is and isn't. And one of the things that the church is currently preoccupied with is managing each other's lives in holiness and structure.
Yeah.
So most churches, we have a structure that defines how we operate in our faith. And so if you leave that structure, a lot of times you have a floundering season. Like people go to Bethel School of Ministry, like after probably a good majority of them, after they leave that environment, they're like, how do I do this now?
Yeah.
And some of them walk away from the Lord. They're like, oh, I feel weird, you know? And so we've created structure to run our faith versus relationship to run our faith. And if I have to manage you or manage your impurity or your sin or your character or your growth, and my faith for what you want has to be bigger than your faith for what you want, I'm not fathering. Mm. Any of those things, I'm not fathering.
That's good.
And so pastors need to ask themselves, am I managing my people and wanting more for them? Do I want it more for them than they want it for themselves?
Wow.
Then we have to back off and allow people to go through an identity journey. We've had like 85 pastor's kids through my local church. I'm no longer the pastor, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I'm the founding pastor, so I still speak once a month. It's still my church, but we gave the senior pastor over to our best friends. And I've trained them, though, like in the sense of like, because we had 86 pastor's kids, including the new senior pastor as a pastor's kid, and apostles kids, which means his dad was in charge of tens of thousands of people in Latin America. And then he's married to Jennifer, who's an apostolic woman. It was really strong gifting on her life. When I say apostolic, I mean she knows how to build and envision the change of culture.
Yeah.
And she knows how to build in culture, not just church, but she knows how to build into culture. And these guys, like one of the things we've had to do with all these pastor's kids is say, you have the freedom to make your own choices. We will not manage your choices with you. We want to help you on your journey and speak into your heart to the degree that you want to be open. Because most people who have a strong leadership calling usually are the most powerful voice in their own life.
Wow.
And they don't share that power unless it's through a structure.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to take them out of the structural mindset and say, share your power because you want to open your heart.
So it sounds like for us to be successful in getting back to a foundation that's biblical in the models of church, we have to deconstruct the models that we've put in place to manage the
management structure. Yeah. Yes. The management of like people's lives and accountability. And there's so many false views of what accountability is. Like you tell me your sin, that's what accountability is. That's not accountability. And that's actually going to lead you to a lot of shame, because if you don't have any new tools to not repeat those patterns, you're just going to come back to me ashamed again that you did it again. And most pastors can't even, I don't know what it's like to walk through homosexuality or to walk through deep pornography or to walk through drug addiction. So I'm not going to manage someone's journey who is in there, who wants to change in those areas.
Yeah.
And so there's all these weird things that have happened in the church where we've created management systems around helping people do their purity process, thinking that that's walking with God in holiness. And the reality is we're supposed to be creating management that manages healthy relationships to form and to continue and set a boundary. So our goal in talking to each other isn't what we're not doing and what the enemy's doing or what man's not doing or whatever. Our goal in talking to each other is spiritually tracking with what God is doing and who he is, and then helping to supplement what's missing with real tools that can actually help people battle through. I've gone into churches that they have the most incredible inner healing ministries that have the same deficits of culture in divorce and drug addiction and suicide rates because they don't have therapy.
Wow.
Because they don't have any new tool set. So they can do spiritual breakthrough, but they don't teach people how to live differently today, or they don't have a Celebrate Recovery program or something. I've gone to places that have only Celebrate Recovery, or they only have therapy, and they have people who have the same rates because they don't have anyone who brings spiritual breakthrough or clarity. And so we have to have a balanced, you know, leadership and a balanced group who's not trying to manage everybody, but is providing the right tools and pointing people at tools, because hard things are going to happen. And when we feel like we have to manage them, we get a Messiah complex. And I think the Church of America specifically, I know this is a worldwide podcast, but we lead in this, which is we lead with we can fix it. We can do it. I'm going to help you. With people who are like, you would be crazy if you were a psychologist and somebody came to you and said, hey, here's my problems, and you weren't trained for that. You wouldn't take them on as a client.
Right.
Well, we have pastors who have barely graduated Bible school who are taking on huge level issues, and they're ruining people's lives because they're giving advice that actually can't help them.
Right. So good. You've released two books in the last year, actually. The most recent being Through the Eyes of Love, Encouraging Others Through Prophetic Revelation. I love that title because a good friend of mine and a pastor had this revelation a couple years ago, and he wrote a book about it. And it was about there's only really one thing that Christ commands if you really look at it, and that's that we love one another.
Yeah.
And when we think prophets and prophetic, we often think Old Testament, like God's coming to destroy you if you don't repent and turn. Yeah, yeah. And you know, you talked about 1/3 of the Bible would go away if the prophetic part was pulled out. And yet a lot of that prophetic isn't that. So how do we navigate that? I love the title. I love the premise of love being the eyes of prophetic. What does that mean, and what's that look like?
So it looks like Jesus, you know, he's our role model for it, where he comes and he picks his dream team, but it wasn't his dream team, it was the Father's dream team. So he had to like trust the Father.
Yeah.
Because he picks fishermen, tax collectors, some prostitutes, like some, his dream team was people who none of us would ever pick. And because of his love for them and what he sees in the Father's heart, even before the Last Supper where they all deny him right after that, he starts calling them apostles. Mm. He starts calling them like, an apostle was a secular term in Rome. It wasn't a Christian term. So he starts saying, you're going to be the leaders of my new government infrastructure of my kingdom. Mm. And the current religious leaders, I mean, Paul was around then. He could have picked Paul all the way back then. He could have picked Nicodemus. He could have picked these guys who are known in the religious structure as being the leaders of thought for spirituality. And he didn't pick one of them. He picked the most unlikely people. And so in that, I start to like engineer and reverse engineer, like, what does it look like when John saw the bride at the end of the race with the trophy in her hand? He saw a bride that was fully ready to cooperate with Jesus, but that's not who he saw when he got back from that vision on the earth. He saw normal people. But somehow there's that gap where when Jesus looked into the Father's heart, he saw Peter, who God was going to build his church on, even though Peter was the same one who was going to deny him worse than Judas, because he was closer than Judas.
Yeah.
So when Peter denied Jesus, it was like way different than when Judas did. They already knew Judas was stealing and doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
When Peter did it, Peter was like the one who said, I would never do it.
Yeah.
So I feel like the prophetic, through the eyes of love, is really about how do you learn how to see God in issues like in politics or in family or in brokenness? How do you begin to see his heart and then manifest a different response because of his heart, both biblically, but also what you're seeing in his heart for you? And so I tell, it's a story-based book. There's about 18 stories. They're not all mine. Some of them are friends. A few of them were borrowed from friends I've had on the podcast. Some were close friends. And one of them was a guy who went through a divorce and his story. One of them was a girl who went through sexual brokenness and molestations type stuff. There's just all these stories that we put in there so that people can see, like, when you hear God, it changes your options and you're going to get a different level of health. And not just a little emotional health, but you're going to get spiritual health, which is a deficit today. And the prophetic helps to bring back the spiritual health meter. You know, it's just totally different when you feel whole inside, not just because you're emotionally better or mentally better, but your whole well-being is better.
Yeah.
So the Through the Eyes of Love helps people to get a grid for seeing God for ways.
Can you tell a story maybe of how the prophetic is walked out in love, maybe a personal story or one that you shared in the book or whatever that looks like of how this is actually walked out?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say I'm trying to think of the most recent story I have. I have a friend who. OK, I think I can tell the story without it. I have to think if it's going to expose anything because it's not somebody that everybody would know, but I just want to make sure I honor him. He was just going through a real struggle and. His marriage. And then they got pregnant again with their fifth child. And he just didn't want to have another baby. He hated the baby phase with all of his children. He loved his children. But just down core gut level honesty, he didn't feel like a good father. And he didn't feel like he was a good father to babies. Wow. And then he didn't feel like he was a good husband. And so all that's playing into, I'm going to recreate my life. I'm not a good father. So therefore, it's okay if I leave.
Wow.
Therefore, I'm not a good husband. Therefore, it's okay if I leave because it'd be better for them to not have somebody who's not good than to have me. Wow. You know, it'd be better for me to be removed. And so we're sitting there and I'm talking to him. And I said, let's pray and ask the Holy Spirit some things. And I said, first of all, I want you to ask him, what do you think about me? And he sits there and he can't get anything. He's just blocked. I said, okay, tell me about your oldest daughter. She's a teenager. I said, tell me the three things that God loves the most about her. And he rattled them off just like, he loves her compassion and she's a passionate leader. She's just like, da da da. And he just goes through him. And I said, okay, how do you know that? Why not? It's because God showed me. Why would God show you how to love your daughter as a father and how to call things out as a father if you weren't supposed to be her father?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What does he love about your wife? How is your wife as a mother? She's amazing. Tell me what he loves about her mothering. Like, let's do listening prayer. Sit down, listen. Okay. Well, she's so intuitive. She knows her needs before they even come up. Wow. She's the biggest nurturer I've ever seen. I have no nurturing in me. She has nurturing. I said, so you're contrasting yourself to what God's showing your strengths are. And we just kind of walked through this whole process. It's kind of like therapy with a prophetic, you know? And, by the end of it, I said, I want you to ask God, who is your child in your wife's womb? Ask God if you can meet your child that he dreamed of for millions of years before you ever created him. Let's ask him. Oh my gosh. What do you see? It's a boy. I know it's a boy already, you know? I see him being so full of leadership and athleticism. And this guy's a musician. So he's like, I feel like all the things I ever want to do in athleticism, it's in him. I feel like he's going to be so charismatic. And so, and he just talks about it. His other two sons are introverts. So he's like, so charismatic. And he just sees him. And I'm like, how could you leave him?
Wow.
Like, you've met him. Can you still leave him? Do you want to get to know him? Do you want to be in their lives? Like, you're seeing who they get to be and you're seeing who they are. Do you want to leave all this? Really? It's really you that's in shame. It's not like you're not the actually even the bad part of the equation. Your self-image is. And so we went through this whole period where he hears God finally after all that. I said, now apply. Like, we're going to look at, we're going to put you in a seat as if there's a little you right over here. What does God think about little you? And he's like, oh my gosh, he just weeps for like 30 minutes and receives the love of God really for the first time for himself.
Wow.
Because he can feel it because of how he loves his own kids.
Wow.
So it just, that's the kind of story where I think when we have the prophetic, those blocks, those blockades where we can't see ourselves and we can't see clearly, all of a sudden we have an opportunity. We won't get it in our head.
Yeah.
Our head will not manufacture that truth.
Yeah.
Just making a better choice. We have to have a spiritual breakthrough.
Yeah. So good. So good. We're going to take a break right here. And in a moment, we're going to come back for our final segment with rapid fire questions. Chasing big ideas and dreams is always better when you do it with others. But sometimes it's hard to find your community, your tribe, people just like you, those idea makers, those dreamers. So where do you find them? Why don't you connect with the JumbleThink community? One of the easiest ways to do it is to head on over to jumblethink.com, where you'll find links to our Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram pages. So let's dream and chase those ideas together. Now let's jump into rapid fire questions with Sean Bowles.
Placez votre électrophone à portée de votre main.
We are back with Sean Bowles. All right, we're going to do rapid fire questions in a minute. I mentioned two books that came out this year. You had one in September. We talked about that, Through the Eyes of Love. And you also had one in June called Breakthrough Prophecies, Prayer and Direction. What's that about?
You know, it's a prayer book, and I've never done this before, but it was really funny. I was sitting in my car, and I was like, I need language for what I needed to pray. Mm. And I'm like, I don't have any language, God. Like, I'm reading the Bible, and I'm like saying David, King David stuff, you know, like for breakthrough. Yeah. I'm like, I need language. And so I felt like God said, sit down with me. I'll give you language.
Wow.
And I sat down, and I started to type out prayers for different themes of breakthrough that would happen for life or finances, resources, transition, these kinds of things. And I was like, this is amazing. And then he said, I'm going to speak to you about these areas. Mm. And he gave me, I think, 13 words, but I wrote 12 of them in the book, for breakthrough that were prophetic words for people that were topical.
Wow.
And then I had these 13 prayers, and I had 13 declarations that people could make. And one of them I borrowed from Bethel, but the rest of them were my own. And it was amazing. Like, I sat there and I read this, and I was like, there's no tools like this. Like, there's new language that, I mean, I don't know if you've ever prayed with somebody at prayer group. You're like at a group somewhere, and someone prays the most eloquent prayer that you're like, that's what I would pray if I had the language. That's what I want. You know, I'm not just talking about like they prayed a pretty prayer and you wish you could be poetic, but I mean, like, what they said communicated your heart better than you've ever been able to in your life.
Yeah.
And I felt like God said, I want you to write a series of books. And this is the first one that helps people to have my perspective, that helps people to pray with my perspective, and helps people to clear my perspective biblically. And I want you to take back language that's been overused. So breakthrough is a theme that's been super cliche. I mean, it's like, you know, every Pentecostal charismatic world has used this word. Actually, every industry has used a scientific breakthrough. Like, everyone's calling everything a breakthrough right now. Yeah. Did you see that guy on TV? He has a breakthrough performance. You're like, that wasn't that great. I'm sorry. But you know, so breakthrough has been cliche all over. And I felt like God said, I want to rebrand this word because it's actually one of my names. And so if you look at, you know, 2 Kings, we have this picture where David calls Jesus or God Bel-Perazim, which means the God who breaks through, and it's a title.
Yeah.
And he says that because in that valley was where the Philistines would ordain their kings and also their war leaders who became the gods, the Baals, when they died, and they would be buried there as well.
Yeah.
And so he says, this place where I've fought before, we've never had a victory. No one's ever had a victory against the Philistines. My God has had the biggest victory over your giants, the land of giants. He is now making your giants look small compared to his goodness and his breakthrough. So that's the sentiment. So I wrote the book so people would have a way to connect to God in areas of like, God, I need breakthrough in my health right now or in my mental health. And we just went over it. And it's been, I mean, we've had 60 or 70,000 copies pushed out in the last 3 months. And people are like, the stories from this, even one of the editors who struggled with chronic depression read the chapter on mental illness and just declared it over herself, and has not had clinical depression since. And she's like, something just aligned in my faith. It's not like a magic prayer. It's like my faith lined up with what I already knew, but I had new language and I knew how to stand in it. Like something inside of me stood in the biblical based prayer that I'd never been able to stand in before. And I'm healed. Like, I just feel I haven't had darkness in my soul. Everything changed. So we've had those kinds of reports where we've used it for Sheree and I, my wife and I, we've used it for the breakthrough prayers, especially for resources and finances. We've been going, God, and for warfare, we've been going, God, we need you to come this way. And it's not written very, it's not an exaggerated, weird, you all get rich type book. It's a book that's saying, here's God's goal for you.
Yeah.
Let's stand into it. Let's walk into it. So it's really fun.
So in those kind of moments, I get that there are times where like the most you can do is just like, you can't put words to the thing you're feeling inside. And it just is like, you know, and you're just like, so how do, when you have a tool like this and it puts to word the things that sometimes we can't communicate for ourselves, how do we actually walk that out then? How do we actually take those moments where we can't be our own advocate, use the tools of something else to make it so that we can unlock the future, the identity again, back to that core of who we are?
Well, I think that's one of my greatest personal strengths in my own journey for myself is that I never think that I'm like the best Bible studier. So I use study guides and I use podcasts and I listen to my favorite speakers. I'll listen to Stephen Furtick from Elevation or Bill Johnson or Rick Warren or whoever. Joyce Myers, I've gone through a season with Joyce. I think a lot of people are so independent in their mindset that they get stuck and they stay stuck and they don't reach out for tools.
Yeah.
So because I've reached out for so many tools, I know how to use tools. So now I know how to create tools because I've used so many. I feel like a lot of people are like, I don't know how to do this. I'm stuck. Waiting on God is never passive. It's never a thing we just do. Go, I'm just, I guess I'll just wait here and do nothing until I watch Netflix until he comes. Waiting on God means do something while in the space between God showing up in a way that meets your faith and you sitting here. Like, do something in your passivity. So for me, and if I have a dead season where like nothing's coming alive in the word or prayer, I borrow someone else's passion. I find the person who seems to be the most passionate about what they believe and I listen to them. There's a season about three years ago where the prophetic was really dry for me and I hear him teaching on it everywhere. It was like, I can't get a prophetic word to save my life. So I got around Todd White a couple times and just, and I went to two prophetic conferences other people were teaching. They didn't even know I was there. And I just listened the whole time.
Wow.
And I just was like, I love their passion. And it rekindled and helped me to fan into flame my own place again. So I feel like for people who are like, do get stuck, it's like, there's tools like this. I presented this tool because I love tools.
Yeah.
And so grab a tool and use it. And like, just make yourself do it. Like, you know, in school, you have to, like our kids, they have to do their homework or they fail.
Yeah.
Well, there's things we have to do in life to wear a big boy, big girl pants, or we're going to fail in our relationship with God. We're going to fail in our relationship to people.
Yeah.
Just do something.
Yeah. You have two girls. I have two girls. I love that you've taken the time to write some resources and books specifically for kids. You have Growing Up with God. What, you know, I asked the question earlier about being a father in the church today and what that looks like. I want to go one step further for a moment on that and say, what does it look like to father well our children? Because
the most complicated question you could ask me.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll wrap it up on a difficult one. I think there's a fear that we're going to mess up our kids, which we probably will. And that,
I'll pay their therapy later though.
Yeah. And that you're taking a stance to say, you know, I can teach prophetic for adults. I can do all this stuff, but we can't forget the kids. And we, as a church in America, have said, we don't know how to deal with our own kids sometimes, so we're going to put them in their own special classes. We're going to send them off to do the stuff that they're supposed to do, and we're just going to hope it all works out well and that they hear what they're supposed to hear. You know that this is a significant journey because you're walking it out yourself. What's that word of wisdom you'd give to a parent right now who's struggling with, I just don't know what to do in this moment?
I think just be really present. Like my whole goal is my mom did this really well. My dad did it fairly well. Mm. And he did it better when I was older than younger is I want to have their hearts and I want to be the one they process with.
Yeah.
And as non-judgment way that I can, but at the same time setting structure and boundaries at the different stages of their life. And so I've done foster care before I had kids. So I did foster care when I was single with a bunch of teenage boys who were like the worst you could ever have. They were on their way to jail. Every one of them was going to jail. And 16 to 18 or 19 years old. And some lived with me for several years, you know. Mm-hmm. And my whole goal was to have their heart, not to be their friend, but to have their heart and to be a place to where they could develop. And so to me, that means being present. That means like I need to spend on average of 15 to 20 minutes of quality time a day with my girls.
Wow.
I need to spend a couple times a week, 3 or 4 hours, real quality time with my girls. I need to be asking them every week, hey, what's going on with your friends? What's going on in your life? And it starts, my girls are 4 and 6. My 6-year-old won't go to bed if there's something in her heart that's aching or hard for her without processing it with us.
Wow.
So she's like, cause she's used to it. Like if she'll tell me I need a daddy daughter date this week, cause I have some things I need to talk to you about.
Wow.
She's 6.
Wow.
And I'll go, okay, let's go out. So I'm like, what do you want to talk about? She's like, you know, the last one was, I'm having a really hard time because I feel like it's hard to raise Hartley with you guys. And I start to hear like, oh my gosh, you have this false responsibility thinking my other daughter's your responsibility.
Wow.
Because you're such a leader. And I had to help her navigate and actually release her from responsibility.
Yeah.
Because you go to school together, they're one grade apart, the whole thing. I had to actually walk her through. She needs her own friends. You are no longer needed to do recess. As a matter of fact, one recess, you're not allowed to spend with her anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to her about this so that you guys can develop your own friends. And there's these, like, so if you have your kids' hearts, and I did it with my foster care kids, and I didn't lose their hearts often.
Yeah.
You do it through anger or frustration or expectation or whatever, disappointment. But I mean, as a parent, you're disappointing yourself and your kid at the same time. You know, it's terrible. But if you have their hearts, I think that that's the thing, is like God will navigate with you when you have their hearts. When you don't have their hearts, you feel defenseless and you feel like, who has their heart then?
Yeah.
And my favorite story about this, it's a quick one, is Katy Perry's parents. I love them so much.
Yeah.
They came to me. Keith Hudson, her dad, said he was at our church service, so he shared this publicly. So I felt, but he shared it with me before a little bit more personally and said, you know, at one point we had disenfranchised our connection to Katie because we were so disappointed that she chose a non-Christian life, like a non-faith-based life.
Wow.
And so we just were like, fine, you're not excommunicated. We'll still talk to you, but we have nothing in common with you. And basically built a wall.
Wow.
You know, built a, not a boundary, but a wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And God's spoke to him at one point, and I mean, rebuke from heaven, and said, if you don't father your daughter Katy Perry, who will?
Yeah.
Who's going to be speaking as a father's voice into her life?
Yeah.
You go win her heart and you go repent to her for how you've treated her.
Wow.
And he went back and they did everything they could. And it took a couple of years to restore relationship so that he could be a voice that she processes with again on her level, because she's an adult.
Yeah.
So he can't control her and he can't tell her what she's supposed to be or what she's not supposed to be, but he sure can carry her heart with her. So I think I've learned a lot from that, even with my own daughters, even though they're little, and then my foster care kids. It's like, my job isn't to control their outcome.
Yeah.
I wish I could. But I think so many Christian parents feel like failures because they're disappointed in what their kids aren't doing. One of my kids blew out, and my foster kids blew out after living the best life for 2 years, blew out and did the most self-destructive things I ever saw. And I remember sitting in a chair going, I failed. And my friend, my best friend, Hona, who leads my church, goes, why did you fail?
Yeah.
I said, I look at him. And he goes, how is that your failure?
Wow.
And I remember going, oh my gosh, this is the pressure Christians put on themselves and parents put on themselves, is we are responsible for their outcome. We're only responsible for their process.
Yeah. Wow. So good. Well, we're going to dive into rapid fire questions.
Oh, here we go.
The first one being, as a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An astronaut, actor, and a creative person.
Nice. Well, you're definitely a creative person. You're working towards entertainment. So when are you going to work out the space thing?
I'm telling you, one day it's going to happen. They're going to, I'm looking at all these guys like Elon Musk, and I'm like, I don't know. I want to go to space.
What is one tip you'd give someone with a big idea or dream and they don't know where to start?
Go take a class on it. Go to your local community college and take a class. If it's writing, go take a community class and get around other people, because being around other people who are learning in it will cause you to learn more and it will cause you to go faster. I took 20 writing classes before I started writing.
Wow. I had no idea. That's crazy. What is one change you'd like to see in the world?
The religious spirit die more.
That's a good one. What do you want your legacy to be?
I love this because I'm getting it a lot lately where people are saying, because of you, I believed in God's ability to relate to me.
Wow.
And I'm hearing God and believing in God's relationship with me now. And so I think my legacy would be that. And then also Christians who are popular in the entertainment industry with faith, believing it's a worthy profession.
Yeah. Wow. And where do you find inspiration?
In all things creative. So video games, television, movies, art, nature, gardening.
I would have never paid you as a person that like digs video games, but that's pretty cool.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's my number one hobby. I gave up golf because of video games. I gave up everything that would normally happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
You didn't lose much with getting over golf. That
I know.
That was a failing endeavor. Like, it is for everyone.
Yeah. That's not. Yeah.
What do you think is one book every dreamer should read?
Harry Potter.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. I think if you want to do more of the I know this is going to be so controversial because Christians hate Harry Potter.
I love the movies. I've just never read the books.
There's a world-building aspect where you have Voldemort, the evil guy, and we all know, it's been around long enough to where we should know, who hates death and is afraid of death, and you have Harry Potter who's willing to give up his life for his friends.
Yeah.
And I think the way she world-built causes you to dream. It causes you to want to be – it's a messianic story in a novel. If not that, then Walking on Water. It's a creative book by a artist woman. I can't remember her name, but you only read it two pages at a time. And I don't mean that because it's in a negative way. You will deeply meditate and think. It's like her internal process with God is imparted through every page of that book.
Yeah.
And it causes you to hope, dream, but also be realistic about it.
Yeah. So good. I know that the Harry Potter stuff is controversial for some Christians. I've never read the books. I've just watched the movies. But I see her in a lot of ways carrying the mantle of a C.S. Lewis today.
She thinks she does.
Yeah.
But she never thought it was going to be controversial. She had no idea.
Yeah.
She's like, Christians think I'm trying to train witchcraft all over the place. And there is some, they license so many products that there is some stuff out there that shouldn't have been made, you know, like Harry Potter Ouija boards and stuff. It would have never been her.
Yeah.
She got all the rights back, so they can't do a lot of that anymore. But yeah, she never thought it would go that far. But she's given away $700 million to charity cases that nobody even looks at, like incarceration and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she's done it as a faith-based person. So I'm like, you know, like to me, besides the book itself, the dreamer behind it, you know, when she was facing a season of death and wrote these books for children to be able to apprehend their imagination and actually feel empowered, it was pretty profound.
How do you define success?
Wholeness and happiness. I mean, when I say happiness, not like happy, happy, joy, joy, but like you're well in your soul. It is well with my soul.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had all kinds of successful business ventures and I made money and all that kind of stuff and had some level of Christian fame. So I'm like a D-list Christian celebrity. It's great. And, you know, like me and Kathy Griffin in the entertainment industry. but I feel like, I actually define my success by when I go home at night, I sleep with a clear conscience. Mm-hmm. I rest really good. I play really well. I have deep conversations really well. Like I'm not, I don't have anxiety.
Wow.
So success to me is like being whole, being well.
What is one trend you're currently excited about?
Superhero movies.
I love that.
It's like my favorite.
Best superhero.
Oh, controversial again. People are going to hate me. Deadpool is my favorite superhero.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
And Wolverine, which are great.
Yeah.
But I would say the best superhero is just Superman. I mean, and Batman. They're like that iconic.
Yeah.
Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. How can you beat them? But they're not my favorite, but they're the best superhero.
I'm pretty vanilla. I'm a superhero. Or I'm a Superman fanboy. So.
Yeah, how could you not be? I mean, he's like, everyone loves Superman.
Yeah. What is one habit helpful in your life?
Well, I'm a writer. So for me, I write every day something.
Okay.
So it's a super help. It helps me to process what's going on inside of myself.
What is one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
That I'm never going to be good at some things and not to be in performance, that there's people who get hired to be good at those things. I just thought I had to be better than I need to be. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I don't need to be, a lot of things. And I feel like I'm not a very good speaker. I'm a good interviewer. I'm a good writer. I'm not a very good public speaker, but I'm a good modeler and I'm relatable. And there's a lot of things that I wanted to be more of.
If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what do you think you'd be doing?
Writing young adult fiction. That's probably like Harry Potter. Okay. I would write young adult fiction and probably produce young adult fiction movies, which I might be going into.
Which would be super fun. I'd watch them. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Our final rapid fire question. What is one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
Probably the writing thing and the entertainment thing. I used to write for video games a lot, and it gave me a bug to where I wanted to write story. And I wrote a lot of story in different video games. It was a lot of fun. But I want to be the creative controller writer. So it's like, I think just publishing some stuff in that the general market that would be really intriguing about the person's identity journey in the young adult fiction world.
As we wrap up, we always love to have our guests have a final thought. What's your final thought for all of us today?
Well, I love your podcast because you're getting so many different types of people who are thinking in so many different ways. I think my final thought would be, whoever's listening, your personal empowerment doesn't depend on the lot in life you've been given. It depends on your faith and belief in God and yourself.
Yeah.
And so no one's going to ever be your advocate for you the way you want it. Like if you want a mentor, a father, somebody to make it happen for you, God is that good to where he'll be your father. And you have enough inside of you to actually go on the journey to make it work. You don't have to have, if you feel like a deficit, the 1 Corinthians 1:26 and 7 says, not many of you were the brightest bulbs in the shop. Not many of you were educated. He chose you, the weakest things in the world, to display his strength. So that gives me a lot of courage because I had a lot against me. I should never be in the position I'm in.
Wow.
But it wasn't I love other people's belief in me. I love a healthy family I was raised in. But ultimately, like Paul says to Timothy, I want to fan into flame the gift of God that's inside of me. I want to fan into flame this life. And no one's ever going to want it as much as you're supposed to. So go after it.
Thank you so much for taking time out and sharing your story, giving us insights into the world of prophetic. And ultimately, really thank you for taking the risk to step into who you're created to be. I mean, there's nothing more beautiful than people who take the time to say, you know what, it's a scary journey. It's an unknown journey, but I'm going to step fully into what God has for me. And I appreciate being around people like you who are doing that. So thanks.
Thank you so much back. I'm so appreciate you, Michael.
Once again, we want to thank Sean Bowles for taking time out and being on the show with us today. You can check him out at Bowles, B-O-L-Z, ministries.com. I want to thank you for tuning into today's show. It means the world to me that you would listen to what we are creating, and I hope it's really inspired you on your journey. We believe you are created for something awesome, that the dreams and ideas inside of you matter. Now it's your turn. Are you willing to take the steps? Sometimes it's a big leap, sometimes it's a small step, but are you willing to take the steps into the unknown, into the places that fear may be challenging you, where you don't know maybe where the resources are going, but it's where you know you need to go. It's where you know you're created to go. Are you willing to take that step? Are you willing to dream big, to chase those ideas? Because if you do, I believe that you can change the world. So it's your turn to get out there, dream big, and change the world around you. Légèrement espacé. Étirez-vous doucement, mais complètement. En avant, en arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant. Dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.